parents told me they knew exactly where they were when JFK was killed. My mom told me exactly where she was at the day she found out Elvis died. And I know exactly where I was at the day I found out Dimebag died. It's pretty rough, but he had such a great life that we're going to talk about it today. So I'm going to crack you up in a Coors Light and get you a black tooth grin. Light it up.
Hello, Mr. Fancy Pants.
What's up, everybody? How's it going? Light it up. Get your poo on this. I've just had it in my head. I got Dimebonics going on like crazy right now. Zach, how are you doing, my man? Watch it go.
Watch it go.
Stay in. I'm all right. This was Lindy. How are you doing?
I'm good.
I was just sitting here talking to Lindy before Zach showed up, and my TV just turned on by itself.
Hanging out with Lindy. Did your TV was hanging out with Lindy's TV?
It was funny. I was sitting here talking. I was like, my TV just kicked on. I was like, it just showed a Nissan logo and then went off. I was like, my house is haunted by Nissan. Nice Datsun.
Goddamn Japanese ghost.
Don't say that. Those are the long black haired creepy ones. Crawl out of the shower drains and shit. I don't want that.
Exactly.
Next thing you know, you have the ring coming out of your TV.
7 days. Oh, my phone's ringing. No. Okay. I didn't watch any videos like that.
Okay. Don't answer it.
Don't answer it. You're fine, probably. I don't know. I don't have a VHS player anymore, so I'm probably good.
Or not. Maybe that means you're not good because you can't copy it.
Oh, yeah. You got to copy and give it to somebody else, don't you?
Yeah.
And they go buy me a VHS.
Spoilers. Duel.
I got to get me a DeLorean so I can go fly.
You can still buy them on Amazon.
Can you? Yeah. What are they, like $10?
Like $50.
Or are they expensive now?
Oh, yeah. They're real expensive now.
Okay. You know that. I just remember to be kind and rewind those stickers on there. Okay, so I'm going to ask you guys some questions. All right. This is guitar styles. All right. When I say Les Paul body style, who's the first guitar player that comes in your head?
Slash.
Mine too.
Yeah. I'm going to go probably Angus Young.
No, that was an SG. Angus was SG. That's later. Damn it, you jumped the gun on that. I had that coming.
Well, you didn't give us a specific Les Paul.
No. Oh, no. Yeah, I did. Well, yeah, the SG was only Les Paul at the beginning, and he didn't like it, so they had to take his name off of it and change it to SG, which stands for solid guitar, because everyone cares about that. Mm-hmm.
I know that.
All right. Who pops in your head when you think of Strat? Stratocaster.
Eric Clapton.
Okay.
Or Stevie Ray Vaughan.
I have Stevie Ray Vaughan and David Gilmour wrote down because those were just the first that, while I was writing it down, those were the first that popped.
Probably like somebody country, like we'll go
Waylon Jennings.
Waylon Jennings, yeah.
Okay, I had Gary Allen and Jim Root. Mm. When you think of Fender Jaguar,
Cobain.
I thought Jay from Dinosaur Jr.
Okay.
I didn't think anything because I didn't even know that was a guitar.
Okay.
More you know.
I've got a few more, and I know Zach's gonna hit a couple of these that I'm gonna say the same person. I bet Warlock,
a BC Rich Warlock.
Yep.
Just anybody in metal.
Okay, I wrote Kerry King because I just remember him playing one whenever I was younger, and I thought it was super cool. Flying V.
Jackson, though, right?
He switched to Jackson, then he switched to ESP, and I think he's back with.
We're fucking nerds. Anyway, moving along.
Yeah, I think he's back with BC Rich now. Okay, Flying V.
Flying V, we'll go right there. Slayer again.
Okay. I wrote Grant, Dave Mustaine, and Randy Rhoads.
Okay, Randy Rhoads would have been my number two.
Yeah, okay. Explorer, the Explorer body style.
Hitsfield.
Yep, Hetfield, and I'd put Kirk from Crowbar. The Iceman, Ibanez Iceman.
Just White Zombie.
Jay, okay, I wrote Jay from White Zombie, but I also put Paul Stanley in there from Kiss, too, because I know he played that shattered mirrored one, which was so stupid because he would cut himself on it, like, all the time. Like, there's your blood stains on that guitar because it is rough. Okay, two more. Thunderbird, the Thunderbird body style. I only have one person because the bass version's all I could think of of somebody that played like a Thunderbird other than, I guess, like probably.
I want to say, who's the chick bass player? Was it Darcy from the Smashing Pumpkins?
Did she play a Thunderbird?
Yeah.
Because I wrote Nikki Sixx, even though.
From Motley Crue, yeah.
Yep. Even though he doesn't play it anymore, it's all on track, but.
I don't think he plays anything, yeah.
Yeah, right.
Probably didn't have strings.
And then I wrote SG at the bottom. Okay. But you already said Angus, because I had Angus wrote down too.
God dang old Akadaka, man.
So I'm just going SG body style. Oh, go ahead, Lindy. Did you have one that plays an SG?
Not an SG. No, I was just looking up a couple of people who played Thunderbird, actually.
Oh, okay. I wrote Pepper Keenan.
Yep.
And also Woody. And then I wrote Lars Fredriksson from Rancid. But they don't play actual Gibsons. They play the ESP or LTD versions. But okay. Yeah. So whenever I say ML body style, I don't think of anybody else other than Dimebag when I think of that ML body style. It's like all you need to do is see a silhouette of that guitar and it automatically jumps in my head that that's Dime's guitar.
Yeah.
So that's why I thought I'd bring that up, because I was like, all these, I could think of so many people that play all these, but when I think of an ML, and I know a bunch of people play them now, all the Dime guitars, they'll play those tribute guitars.
Right.
But it's all because it's giving props to Dime.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But
and I don't know, have you ever seen any of those videos of like his vault where they pop open all the guitars he had?
Yeah.
And then you look at them and half of them are like, there's no back plate on them and he's got them all fucking jerry-rigged on the back. Like extra springs was taking, and shit. Yeah.
They was taking parts off of them and throwing them on other guitars. Yep. Yep.
Well, I got 100 guitars, but you know, like I'd say maybe like 10 of them probably work, you know. So,
well, you know, we've watched enough videos of Dime to know how he was. It was probably like, oh, this is broke. Yeah, just go down there and grab one of them boxes. It doesn't matter. Just grab a case.
Grab another one.
Listen, so we already stole this one. Give me another one.
Three.
Watch him go. So, parts on my guitars. Watch him go. Which seems insane, because they would have sent him as many as he wanted, of any kind that he wanted. It was just...
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
So, yeah. Once again, getting into this. This is rough for me. It's great, and then it's rough. But Daryl Lance Abbott was born on August 20th, 1966, in Ennis, Texas. Or is it Ennis?
It's Ennis, I believe. I mean, unless Ennis. You want it to be like penis, then it's penis.
I didn't go there.
All right.
His father was Jerry. His mother was Carolyn. And he had a 2-year-old brother named Vinnie Paul, who was born on March 11th, 1964. And these brothers were inseparable. Just not only brothers, best friends. It was just, they were always around each other. I was like, I remember me and my brother are good friends now. But when we were younger, we were 4 years apart and we didn't get along as well then.
Right.
But, okay. So Jerry was a music producer. But it was country.
He was not
music.
A race car driver, though.
Nope. Jerry wasn't a race car driver. He, country music producer.
Yeah.
So when Daryl decided he wanted to play guitar and Vinny decided he wanted to play drums, the parents were like, yeah, great. Go ahead.
And can you imagine what that house was going to be like?
It had to be a big house. I'm assuming the boys lived in the basement. Because if Kimber was playing drums and my boy was playing, which my son
had like a separate garage. It was not attached to the house or something like that.
Country music producer. He might've had a sound room.
That's true.
And just be like, go in there. Play all you want. It's fine. Shut the door.
That's a fucking door. Yeah.
It's going to work. But I did have a son. Oh, I still have a son that came up to me and said, Dad, you know, I'm thinking about playing guitar. I was like, let me see what I got underneath the bed, buddy. Went, how about my warlock? Would you like to play this one? He goes, oh, that one's cool. You damn right, it's cool. Doesn't sound great when you plug it in, but it's been through the ringer, but it's got all these stickers and shit on it. put on. It's like, there's a Danzig sticker and Slayer. All right. But it made me happy. So I got to imagine if this guy's that big into music, that when his kids were like, hey, we want to play instruments, he was just like, yeah, all right. So the parents were fully behind him. And Dime's first guitar was a Hofner Les Paul copy that he got at 11.
Yeah.
So he played it, and him and Vinny were just playing constantly together, just, you know, nonstop practicing, which would be pretty awesome if your drummer was just like, you just knocked on his door and been like, dude, I got a song. You want to work on this? You want to try this out?
Put your Star Wars shit down for a minute. Let's go play.
Yeah, let's go. Yeah. just sitting there playing Nintendo and be like, you want to jam?
Let's go. All right. I popped down, left, right. Okay.
And then around 14 or 15, his dad bought him his dream guitar, which was a Dean ML. On the very same day his dad bought him that guitar, he went to play at a guitar competition, and he won. And he won a Dean ML.
Yes. They had two, so right went, there.
He went from a rip-off Les Paul to two Dean MLs. And later, Dime sold that guitar to buy a car, but ended up getting it back. And that is the guitar that's known as the Dean from Hell that he kept all through his career, recorded with, played with.
And wasn't that one like the ugliest fucking thing? Like, it was like reddish purplish.
I think he got it painted or something, maybe.
Okay.
But I think it was like maroon at first, but I think he got it painted because I think he had so many freaking guitars that just keep popping. I think of Dime Bolt, Thunder Cross, freaking Dime Slime, all these things. So these guitar competitions.
Side note, this is a guitar jerk off session. This is going to be
kind of going back to Robert Johnson kind of episode. So these guitar competitions came up. Now he's 14 and 15 years old going to these guitar competitions, playing against these guys that are in their 20s and 30s. And they're saying it's not even close. Like, he's just blowing everybody out of the water. So it got to the point where he'd show up for a competition and they were like, nah, man, you're a judge. You're not allowed. You're going to be a judge. It's like, we're not doing this anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. We're not going to give you no more shit, kid.
Yeah. You have enough guitars from us. He won enough guitars that he just bought that Camaro probably just by selling the guitars he won at those competitions.
Yeah.
So in 1981, Vinny was asked by some dudes at his school if he wanted to join a band. He was asked by Terry Glaze, Tommy Bradford, Donnie Hart. He said he would, but he would only do it if his brother could join too.
There's the original.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I'm talking about right there.
That's a solid brother.
And look at that hair.
that was not Dimebag Daryl.
That was Diamond Daryl.
That was Diamond Daryl.
That was Diamond Daryl. Because later on, Dimebag was asked to join Megadeth, but he said he would only do it if his brother could come.
That would have been a fucking badass band, man.
That would have been crazy, dude. To have Dave... Yeah. And Dime's been like,
yeah,
there's too much ego up there. There's too much going on. There's too much good shit on that stage. I don't know what to do.
Your turn. Now it's my turn. Now it's Vinny's turn.
We don't even have to write lyrics.
Yeah.
So they do start this band. And Vinny said that on this interview that I was watching, I didn't read this. I was watching an interview and I forgot Livewire or something like that, that I seen it on. Or Livewire, the Molly Crew song.
Okay, I'm going to go with Loudwire on this one.
Loudwire. It is Loudwire. And he said he got the name Pantera from one of his buddies that told him, he's like, you got a name your band Pantera. And he was like, what is that? And he goes, it's a car. And it's pretty badass because it looks like kind of like a Lamborghini. Not as reliable or as high quality. It kind of looks like one. So he looks it up and he's like, yeah, and in some languages it meant panther or something like that. So they, yep, that's it, Pantera. So Daryl takes the name Diamond Daryl. And soon he was sharing the lead work with Glaze, Terry Glaze, this singer, guitar player. He was like singer, lead player. And then Dime.
That didn't last long.
Dime comes in and Terry's just like, yeah, I'll just play rhythm. And then Terry's like, you know what? I don't really need this guitar at all.
I don't want to haul the shit around, so I'm going to bring this microphone. And,
I was watching videos of Dime. It was Dime, Rex, and Vinny on the drums. And they were doing Metallica songs, like Seek and Destroy.
Yeah.
And it's just the three of them. And it sounds exactly like Metallica was playing it, and Dime was singing it. Yeah. They didn't even have a singer up there.
Yeah.
And I was just like, what? Yeah. That's fucking great. Yeah. So fucking cool. So, yeah. And then, Donnie Hart left. You know, he left the band because he was probably like, no one even knows I'm here. They're all staring at that dude all the time.
He's skanking all our chicks, man.
But they were super glam. Super glam. A lot of white rain. A lot of spandex. A lot of that going on. Probably a lot of scarves. Things of that nature.
This was the era of Whitesnake and Poison and Motley Crue.
Very much. And those were the bands that were blowing up. So if you wanted to try to do that, that's what you was trying to do. Mm-hmm. So Jerry, the manager.
/ dad.
They released their first studio album called Metal Magic in 1983, which I knew about that album, and I have heard it, and I'm not a huge fan. It's okay. I'm not a hair metal dude. Cinderella have a couple songs I like. I like Motley Crue. And then Wasp. Would you consider...
Sorry, it was a perfect moment.
Would you consider Wasp hair metal?
They're more metal, really, right? Really just bad. Whatever metal, yeah.
You don't like Wasp?
Dude, they're...
Oh, my God.
They are sexual perverts, Matt.
Then they released another album called Projects Jungle in 1984.
They were like a little before their time there on that one.
This one was a bit better. But Metallica had also released Ride the Lightning the same year. So Dime and Vinny were listening to it, and they're like, you know, they wanted to sound heavier, but they didn't want to be thrash. They wanted to, making their own thing, but they wanted to, let's play that, but throw some of this Southern fucking groove in it.
Yeah.
So
they wanted to throw the blues in there, right?
Yeah. They wanted that good old Texas Southern rock in it. Okay, so they mixed their styles together, and in 1985, they released I Am the Night, which was heavier but still not great because Glaze, the singer, would not let go of the hair metal, glam metal thing. That's what he wanted to do. So he's got to go.
See you later, dude.
Pieces. So Glaze left, and the band, you know, at the end of the same year, it was at the end of 85 that he left. It was in the same year that they released it, that he was already gone. Cause what do these brothers know about changing their sound? What's that ever going to do? Probably not going to go anywhere. Right.
Hmm. Hey, Matt, watch you go.
Lindy's
has no fucking clue what's going on. All right. Lindy, I want you to do yourself a favor right now. I want you to go to YouTube and just type in Pantera
three.
Watch it go. And just you can just put it on mute and just watch it while we're doing this, and you'll see. We watched this video over and over and over.
It was a ritual.
The whole time we lived in Phoenix, I think we watched it like at least twice a week. At least probably more like than twice a day.
If that wasn't on, it was the X-Files. And if the X-Files were on, Grant said, shut up and turn the lights off.
Shut the fuck up and sit down and shut the fuck up.
So they tried quite a few different singers, but it wasn't until 1986 when a NOLA guy named Phil showed up and they had their man. It was kind of like pretty instant that they were like, they jived with him. He was cool. And this was back, Phil had the old poofed up hair and shit too.
Yeah.
For the first one. So the lineup now is Dime, Vinny, Rex, and Phil. And they start working on their new album. They were still doing the hair metal look. And they released Power Metal in 88. And this is where it kind of started.
Yeah.
I heard that album too. Once again, it's okay.
So, yeah, definitely not their best work. But
it's not my favorite. It's not my favorite by far. But with the big four. Somewhere. Yeah, exactly. And It's like a baseball team. You sell off all your players and you buy new guys. You got to start somewhere. You got to start working up. So with the big four,
stepping stones.
Yep, the big four is out there now, right? No, they weren't called that then, but you got Slayer, Metallica, Anthrax, Megadeth, all selling out these shows constantly. They're on Headbangers Ball, and they're playing all these shows. They're just wearing jeans and t-shirts, you know, bullet belts and some leather jackets here and there. But that's, you know, they're not. There's no spandex. They're not using a whole lot of white rain.
Think a gay guy for that, by the way. The whole, you know, bullet belts and.
It's been a minute since I've seen a bullet belt.
Yeah, breaking the law.
So they decided to change up their look, and this is where Dimebag changed his name to Dimebag. He dropped the dime in Daryl, but I thought
because that's like when you put bags in a dime or dimes in a bag rather, so you can like go buy your sodas from the machine, right?
Sure.
Okay. Just check.
It's the cheap bag of weed. That's what I thought. That's where I'm going. But, I was getting ready to say something. I forgot what it was when you threw me off. I was like, what are you talking about change for? Changed his name to Diamond. And I got to have to look into this harder because I didn't think about it until today. But I thought that on my original, the first Cowboys from Hell CD that I bought, I thought it still said Diamond Daryl inside it. But it might not have. It might not have, but I thought the original one that I had that in there. I don't own any of the Pantera CDs anymore. I don't have any. They was all stolen. I lost all my Pantera CDs, my White Zombie CDs, Metallica CDs.
Lost them all. Sounds like some banger fucking broke into your truck, man.
Straight up, see around like a donut banger. One of them kind of dudes. So,
some dirty banger looking for a dime bag.
Yeah. So the brother's dead. At this point, he kind of like, ooh. Yeah, that's, I'm going to have to step down from this. This is you're getting even farther from country than what you were before.
Yeah, we're talking still talking about Jerry that wasn't the race car driver, right?
Right. Yep. Jerry the dad / manager. So he hooks him up with Walter Bryan, who took over as their manager, and he was with them for the entire time that they were together.
Okay.
And trying to get him signed. It's fucking weird that it took so long, but it did take a while to get him signed. And Atco signed them in 1989 with producer Terry Date, and they started working on their next album. Maybe you've heard of it, Cowboys from Hell. Yeah, came out in 1990. So they got this brand new sound that people later called groove metal. It's like, because it's thrashy, but it's also got that groove to it where it's impossible to listen to a Pantera song and not go, unless it's like Good Friends in a Bottle of Pills.
And if Todd were here this week, he would talk to us all about waffle stomping on coffee tables.
In Arizona
at 3 a.m. when you're in a drunken haze after you've decided to not take the airplane ride that you said you're going to tell your brother. This is like when your brother doesn't have a cell phone, by the way, and you just call him like after he's already been to the airport and you're not there and waited on you for fucking hours. And he's like, oh, bro, I'm taking a later flight. I'm going to get in now. And then he stumbles off the plane and proceeds to tell you that he dropped like $800 at the strip bar while he was waiting on his other flight.
He's helping those girls through school. It's a good Samaritan.
He's doing what he can, you know.
So, got this new sound. Later, people called it groove metal. Dime used a Jim Dunlop Crybaby, UG Score 9, a Fuhrman PQ4, MXR6 band equalizer, Rocktron guitar silencer, Randall RG100, and an MXR flanger doubler on this album. That's it.
And Lindy does not speak fucking Spanish, Baxter.
I only did it for the one album.
Okay.
I told Lindy I was going to nerd out on part of it, and that was it, because I was going to do it for every album, and then I thought everybody would be like, all right, that's enough.
Oh, shit.
What do these numbers mean?
What does it all mean, Basil?
So they go on a two-year tour with this album, 2 years of tour. It was almost 200 gigs that they did, and Rita Haney was Dime's girlfriend, and he took her on the road. Like, she had been his girlfriend for a while, so he wasn't one of those dudes that was apparently out just, you know, plowing chicks. And brought her with him. And how good he was to the fans. Like, you see all these videos. Like, you type in Dimebag with fans, and it's like, not like, the dude was like, in my opinion, the greatest metal guitar player of all time. And he's just sitting there.
One of the nicest dudes.
Yeah. Just sitting there behind a crappy little plastic table at a record shop, signing anything you want. Fucking take pictures with you. Give you hugs. Freaking. Just. Yeah. Once again. Okay. In 1992, Vulgar Display of Power is released into the world. That is my absolute favorite of all their albums. Me and my buddy and cousin Riley, God rest his soul, would get in a fight about this because in 1994, Far Beyond Driven was released, and that was his favorite, and he tried to explain to me how it was better. So it's like every 2 years, they're doing 2 year tours, and then every 2 years they're dropping an album. So it's like play, drink, party, write music, play, drink, party, write music, play, drink, party, write music.
Burning the candle.
Both ends, real hard.
You, yeah.
Light it up. So it went from they went from like wanting to sound like some of these bands to actually sharing the stage with them. It didn't take long. Like after Cowboys from Hell came out, that it's like they're on tour. You know, they're going out with Metallica. You know, you could play with Slayer. They're playing with Typo Negative. It's just all these huge shows and the booze. Oh, the booze. Yeah. So, Diamond Vince, the Black Tooth Grin, which is some Crown, some Secret Seven, and a little bit of dab of Coca-Cola. Just, you know, just because it's, you know, you got to put something in it, I guess. I don't know.
For color.
But they would roll out like it's like they stole it from the hotel, like one of those carts where they'd bring your room service on, and it'd just be full of these solo cups, these clear solo cups that were like a quarter full of Coors Light, and just start tossing them out into the crowd so that people could catch them and take drinks. Like that one video, that chick sitting up front, and she's just passed the fuck out, and they just stop, and they're like, yeah. She's having a good time. She kind of stirs. It's like, how are you sleeping during this? And it's so fucking loud. It's crazy.
Must have had me like 14 or 15 of them Dr. Peppers.
Piss herself. So these guys are just straight up killing it together. And it's... like I said, watch the videos, because I can't even explain how much fun they had to be having. And they were rock stars, not to the fans. They didn't act like pompous assholes, but they would fuck up a hotel room.
Oh, yeah.
Pretty bad.
To say, though, if you have as weak of a stomach as I do when it comes to vomit, don't watch any of these videos.
There's some rough stuff.
Yeah.
My favorite was
when they start to, they offer the guys like $1,000 to do like weird, stupid shit. Like, if you can eat this whole cake in 2 hours, or
drink this whole bottle of Tabasco for $150. So watch it go.
Yep.
Lindy, when you get to the part where it's Stan, get down. Brace yourself.
Down.
I did not know that amount of whatever kind of infection that is was allowed to be in a human. Just keeps going. But I'll skip through that stuff. Just partying, having a great time, writing music, great music, great albums.
These guys taught other bands how to treat other bands on the road. Like, and you can, I mean, like Dave Grohl's famously said that, like, you know, Pantera told them how to treat other bands on the road.
They didn't do it like Van Halen used to do it back in the day, even though these guys looked up to Van Halen. Like, Van Halen would make the opening band sound like shit on purpose.
Yeah.
Because they wanted to sound better, plus they wanted people to come out and buy their fucking merch instead of listening to that band. They didn't do that. They were like, no, come on. And they'd get up on stage with them and do shit. It was pretty fucking cool. But it's at this time that in 95, things started to change a little bit because Phil started to become, I wouldn't say a dick, but he wasn't hanging out and partying like he used to. Right? Like, he was spending more time alone. Well, the reason why he was spending time alone is because in 94, he had a back injury. And the doctors could have fixed it, but it was going to be like at least a year for his like rehab. And he was just like, nah, fuck that. I'll take care of it through booze. And then that stopped working. So you got to move on to stronger stuff. And apparently heroin would help.
That's the strongest shit you can go for, yeah.
You go right for it, I guess. But as with all drugs.
Straight to the top, man. Yeah.
As with all drugs, your body builds up a tolerance and then you need more. So you keep taking more to keep it going, just like Nikki Sixx did. In 96 at a show in Texas, he overdosed and they said his heart had stopped beating for like 3 or 4 minutes. But then he was revived. So the brothers find out about this and they're fucking embarrassed. It's just like, we drink and we party and we smoke weed, but we don't do that shit. What are you doing? You know?
Yeah.
And that kind of never goes away. Where they kept touring, they kept playing, they kept writing things. But
that's where the drift started right there.
Yeah, that's where the drift started. Plus, Phil can't shut his fucking mouth a lot of times. I don't know if anybody's seen him yell white power and give a Nazi salute at the end of one of the shows, but that wasn't even that long ago that he did it, because fucking the drummer from Danziger from Typo Negative, I think Kenny, he's going, dude, what the fuck? He's like, come on, get off the fucking stage. He's like, you could actually watch him in a video go. He can say whatever he wants to. Freedom of speech, he can say whatever he wants to. He gets on and apologizes about shit, but the bands, you know, they don't care for it. They wanted to just go out and play music, be a rock band, okay? So for the 96 release of The Great Southern Trendkill, Phil recorded all of his vocals in NOLA in Trent Reznor's studio. Like, he didn't come be with the band at all. The band recorded all their shit, sent it to him, Trent Reznor's studio in NOLA. He recorded all of his vocals there. And it was in 2000 that Reinventing the Steel was released. And I remember the first time I listened to it after I bought it, that I knew it was the end.
Yeah.
There was something about that album. I was just like, it's like the energy's kind of gone. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's not bad, but it felt blah compared to the others. And then August 20th.
Yeah.
It felt like the passion wasn't there. You know what I mean? That's what it felt like. It's like you mailed it in, kind of. Like if it was all done correctly and you was all into it like you was in the older stuff, that it would have been badass, but you could feel it that it wasn't right. But, and I'm not even saying that looking back. This was, the first time I heard it, I thought it was the end. From the cover art to the songs, and I was just like, ah. So August 28th, 2001... they play their last show, and it was in Japan. Last show they will ever play. August 28th, 2001. So after September 11th, they like have a group call, and they're like, you know, we're going to agree that we're not going to tour. You know, we're not going to tour for a little bit. We're going to let shit settle down, because if you don't remember what that is, I'm not going to tell you.
Yeah. Yeah.
So he doesn't want to tour with the band. He's okay with, you know, taking a break, but he does not stop touring with Down and Super Joint Ritual.
I was going to say, that year he put out a Down record, right?
NOLA, which I love. And
everything except the snares on that record.
Keep bringing that up. You bring that up every time we talk about that album.
You listen to that album now, and I've just ruined it for you.
I can hear it now.
Like, listen to that fucking trashy-ass fucking snare. What's up with
that? You haven't ruined it for me, but I do notice it than I didn't before. But I'm just like, damn it, Zach.
It's not every track either. It's like, but it's like at least half the album.
Okay,
you can tell it was recorded in probably two different settings, like two different drum mic settings.
Yep. So Down is Phil Anselmo singing, Rex Brown's playing bass, Pepper Keenan, who I love, playing guitar, Kirk from Crowbar, who I love, playing guitar, and the drummer from I Hate God, which I don't remember his name, and I didn't write him down because I thought I would remember it, and now it's gone. Also, he was doing Super Joint Ritual, which I fucking hate. I couldn't get into it. Once again, my good friend and cousin Riley, God rest his soul, we used to fight all the time because he told me how great that band was. And I was like, that is fucking shit, man. I fucking hate it. I don't like it at all.
My cousin Riley, God rest his soul, he likes this band. Fucking pieces of shit. But I tell him, okay, if it's your favorite band, God rest your soul.
constantly. Yeah. Excuse me. It's just one of those things. It's like, you got a good voice. Why are you just screaming all the time? Never mind. If you like Super Joint, good for you. Not my cup of tea. So the breakup was announced in 2003. And Phil ran his fucking mouth in a magazine called, what was it? In the Metal magazines. I forget what the name of it was. Shit.
Well, okay, right. It was more than one. It's okay.
Yeah, it was a bunch of them.
Metal Militia. And, like that, yeah.
Something like that. Metal Injection, one of those fucking ones. Hit Parade, I don't know. But he would run his mouth about Diamond Vinny. And I get the anger. I understand that. You're angry, you say shit. Who hasn't done that? Come back and apologize or whatever. So I remember hating Phil after reading some of those. But then later going back and being like, oh, who cares? He's got his bands. So they start Damage Plan. And they got Patrick Lachman to sing and Bob Zilla to play bass.
And those guys were all local Texas guys, right? They were like their friends.
Yeah. They were dudes they knew. And I remember listening to A Newfound Power when it came out, because it was released in 2004, and I loved the music. I wasn't huge on the singer, but it was probably because I was so used to when I heard Dimes playing that I heard Phil singing with it. You know what I mean? And that's some tough shoes to fill.
Yeah.
Phil, I didn't mean that. Plus, he doesn't wear shoes anymore on stage. He goes up there barefoot. So they go back to touring, right? This album's coming out, they go back to touring, and it just boggles my fucking mind how you can go from playing to a million people in Russia. You know, you're playing these sold-out places everywhere, these huge venues. You switch a band, still the same two dudes with a different singer, and now you're playing these small shows as like 200, 300 people.
I got two examples of that for you.
Let's have them.
Nirvana. And then the beginning of the Foo Fighters.
Okay. Same deal. Yeah.
And then second, like Black Crowes. And I remember going to see the Chris Robinson Experience. And that's the singer from the fucking Black Crowes, right?
Yeah, but he can't get along with his brother to make millions of dollars. It doesn't make any fucking sense.
They're getting along now. They're getting along. Are they? Said they're going to make millions of dollars again. But I went and saw the Chris Robinson Experience at the Canopy Club. And I shit you not, Matt.
What did you see about the Canopy Club?
There were 10 fucking people there, and I was with 4 of those people. And I was just like, I just like walked up to the stage, like directly in front of Chris Robinson, crossed my arms, like, holy shit, this is never going to happen again. So there you go.
What was the one in, was it the Castle Theater? Is that the one that was
in Bloomington?
I think that's where I saw Down. It was either there or the Canopy Club. It was one or the other that I watched Down at. We were just talking about Down, so it was in my head.
You're good.
So there's a fella named Nathan Gale. And that's the last time I'll say his fucking name. I came up with a nickname for him. His nickname is Cunt Knuckle. That's what we'll go with from now on. So Cunt Knuckle was from Ohio. And he had some mental health issues. He loved Pantera in high school after some of his friends turned him on to, I think it was Vulgar Display of Power. But he eventually lost his fucking marbles. He apparently was telling people that he was friends with the band. He knew the band. He was writing songs with the band. They stole his lyrics. They stole some of his riffs. Like, yeah, because Dimebag would need to steal Cunt Knuckle's riffs. And they were trying to steal his identity.
Wait.
I don't know. To what end? I have no idea. But they were definitely trying to steal his identity. So after high school, he joins the Marines, but was later discharged 1 year after joining because the doctors all got together and they all came to the same conclusion and diagnosed him as batshit. Okay. So Cunt Knuckles is out of the Marines, and he later stopped taking his meds, which is a great idea. I mean,
yeah,
real good idea. But he still thought Pantera owed him money because, of course, he had wrote all the lyrics to Vulgar Display of Power.
Yeah.
And they wasn't paying him his, you know, what he was due. He's due all this money because he wrote all these songs. Mm-hmm. Come on, guys, pay up. So apparently he's angry. December 8th, 2004, Damage Plan was playing a gig in Columbus, Ohio in a small club called Alrosa Villa Nightclub. And Cut Knuckle brought a Beretta 9mm in the hoodie of his pocket. Got to give it up to them security guys. Let me tell you, yeah, I can't go into a baseball game with a pocket knife.
Yeah, I was going to say, I can't remember the last time I wasn't patted down going into a show.
And he had, well, here's he wasn't patted down because he didn't have to be. He tried to rush the stage at a previous show, but was stopped by security, and he was unarmed at that one, but he was trying to get up on the stage. So the security stopped him there. And this time, he wanted to get Dime and Vinny as they was getting off their tour bus. Like, he was going to pretend like he was coming out to get an autograph or some shit like that, and pop both of them. He wanted to take them both out. Fucker got there too late. They was already inside. So he hung around outside like a fucking creeper. And the security noticed him, but they didn't think anything of it. They thought maybe he was just listening from the outside, you know, just trying to catch something for free. Yeah. So he waited till the opening bands had played. There was two opening bands. And as Damage Plan started playing, old Cunt Knuckle jumped over a wooden fence and entered a side door that was unlocked. They had a wooden fence easily that you could jump over and an unlocked side door. Security noticed him.
I was not a little dude. He was not a little ninja dude. He's a big boy.
He's a big old football player, motherfucker, too. Yeah. He was a large man. Security notices him right away, but they think, oh, you know, he's just trying to get in here without paying for a ticket. So fucking what? Go get his ass and get him the fuck out. That's your job. What do you mean getting in? Oh, it's not a big deal. He just wants in for free. Do you work for free, asshole? Do you think that band wants to play for free? But get the motherfucker out unless he buys a ticket. So just over a little over a minute into the first song, old Cunt Knuckle jumped on stage and ran at Dime. Shot him four times. Three of them in the head and one of them in the hand, and Dime was only 38 years old. So when I heard about this, I remember the day because this happened on a Wednesday night. I didn't write that down, but I remember because it was a Thursday morning when I was at work when the lady came on the radio and said that ex-Pantera Damage Plan guitar player Dimebag was shot last night on stage. And that was the end of it. That's all she does.
Yeah.
What? What? So I called the radio. I was like, well, you said he was shot. Did he make it? And they're like, oh, sorry, no. So my world's different now, and you probably should have fucking said that. So I don't know how many times your phone's going to ring. Yeah. But a club employee that heard the first shots ran out the back door, dialed 911. Jeffrey Mahan Thompson was the band's head of security. He tackled Cunt Knuckle, but he had his gun, and he, big motherfucker, shot him. Yeah. He's dead. Eric Hulk, an Al Rose employee, tried to grapple him. But he was killed too. Nathan Bray was just a fan. Just a dude in the crowd jumped up on the stage and tried to go over to help Dime, thinking maybe he could give him CPR or something like that. He was shot and killed. The tour manager, Chris Plaska, and drum tech, John Brooks, who became a hostage, they were also shot but survived. And a crew member named Travis Burnett was also hurt, but he was treated at the scene. So as this motherfucker takes John Brooks as hostage, like he's holding him back. Like he ran out of ammo, had to switch magazines. Like, yeah, he got into a concert with a fully loaded 9mm with extra magazines. So an officer named James Niemeyer entered through the rear entrance with a Remington 870 12 gauge, and he wanted to try to catch him by surprise because he was like holding the hostage like toward the crowd, you know, looking. He was thinking that entrance was going to be, well, he's standing back behind Vinny's riser, his drums, and pops over and shoots Cunt Knuckle right in the fucking face.
Good.
Dead man. Yeah. Too bad he didn't suffer more. But the whole thing, they said, lasted 5 minutes. So it was about a 5 minute long ordeal. And to think Vinny sitting there playing drums and gets to watch his brother and best friend just be killed right in front of his face.
And then all his friends too.
Yeah. just the most horrific. And you know, your head of security is doing his job. He's going out there, you're trying to stop this dude. Well, yeah, you get shot too. You know why? Because the security for the place wasn't doing their job. And I'm not going to rant on them too much. They have to live with that shit. So they, you know, it's got to be rough. They was like, yeah, if I could go back. Yeah, of course I. So it's said that old cunt knuckle yelled, this is what you get for breaking up Pantera. But other people that was in the crowd said they didn't hear him say that, but also they were playing at the time. And I don't know if you ever heard Dimebag play before, but it's fucking loud. It's fucking loud. So I don't know. But it's in Metal Hammer magazine. I did write it down. Okay. Phil's BS in Metal Hammer magazine. He, before this happened, he said that Abbott need to be beaten severely is what he had said in a bunch of different articles. He would talk about how somebody should take a baseball bat to him or whatever. I'll take it
to heart. And
yeah, but it's still not Phil's fault. He should be able to say in a magazine, hey man, somebody should get on stage and shoot him with a fucking 9mm. Yeah, you're allowed to say it. You should be allowed to say it. It's not his fault that it happened because some idiot did it. Right? So I can't blame Phil for it. I disliked him for a while, but okay. So lots of people didn't care for Phil after this, even though I said I don't think it was it's certainly not his fault. He didn't do it. He didn't cause it. He didn't promote it. Inciting violence, maybe, but listen to their music. That's inciting violence in a lot of their lyrics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So if you're going to push it against that, you got to push it against everything else, and I'm not willing to do it.
Yeah.
Because I feel like Kerry King did from Slayer when those Satanists, so-called Satanists, sacrificed that virgin, but they raped her first. And Kerry King said, well, they didn't do a very good job because they raped her first. She's not a virgin anymore.
Yeah.
It's like... Yeah, not a funny joke, but if you were getting prosecuted with that, you'd want to stick it to him and tell him to go fuck themselves, basically. Mm. And he's allowed to say whatever he wants, once again. So Dime's girlfriend, Rheta Haney, she said she'd blow Phil's brains out if he even attempted to come to the funeral, which you can understand.
Yeah.
Like, you'd be heartbroken, and you hear all this shit that he said this and that, and you hear, well, this guy climbed up on stage because he was doing what Phil asked him to do, you know?
Yeah.
You'd lose your mind. You wouldn't want, but I guess later they
reconciled.
They got reconciled a bit. Vinnie Paul never talked to him again for the rest of his life.
Yeah,
and there are interviews on Loudwire where if they even mention Phil, he's just like, nah, I ain't talking about it. Nah, I ain't got nothing to say about him. I ain't gonna talk to him. There's nothing we're gonna ever do. There's never gonna be a reunion. It's never happening. But Vinny did later go on to do Hell Yeah, with Chad Gray from Mudvayne, the guitar player from Mudvayne.
Vinny was a super nice guy as well. There was a bartender I knew from Fort Worth over in the Stockyards, and he knew Vinny, used to party with him. He used to come in to this little country bar, even though he didn't like country music, just to hang out with him. One of the songs on that record, but cool. Dustin, if you're listening, man, this episode's for you, I guess, man.
Yeah. It was one of those deals where it's like, they were so close that it was like after Dime, it didn't take long for Vinny to be like, he kept playing and stuff. And I watched videos with like Hell Yeah and stuff like that, where they did bus tours. Well, they go through the whole bus, but you don't even see Vinny Paul until they get to the very end because the fucking Cowboys game's on. He's like, I ain't missing this shit. Fuck your bus doors. I'm watching the game. And it's just like, I don't know if it was just like he lost his brother and it just went out, you know?
Yeah.
Like, lost the flame.
The light was gone. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. But Dime was actually buried in a Kiss casket that was donated by Gene Simmons.
Holy shit, that you gave him something for free?
Gene Simmons doesn't give away anything for free.
I know.
That is the craziest shit I've ever heard. It must have been, he was like, yeah, I guess I'm Gene Simmons from Kiss, and I guess I'll give this to them so that I can raise some publicity, and people will know that there are Kiss caskets that they can purchase for $80,000 or whatever. Fucking dickhead.
It's a marketing ploy, yeah.
Ever since he ran down Prince after he died, I'm just like, fuck you, Gene, dickhead. He was Dime was buried next to his mother, who had died from cancer in 1999. So I'm not going to end this with just that awfulness right there, okay? I want to end it with something that I think is fucking awesome. 4 months before his murder, Dime got to meet Eddie Van Halen. Like, been a huge fan his whole life, and I don't know, because they don't play the same kind of music. They wouldn't have been in the same venues. They wouldn't have been playing the same shows.
Yeah.
You put Van Halen playing at a show with Pantera, who's going to open? Pantera wouldn't want to open for Van Halen because that would be dickhead, but Van Halen can't open for Pantera because it'd be all fucked up. It'd be stupid.
Yeah.
It'd be crazy. Yeah. So he got to meet Eddie Van Halen, and he asked him if he could get a replica of his black and yellow striped guitar. Well, when Dimebag died, Eddie Van Halen gave that original black and yellow striped guitar to be buried with Dimebag.
That's fucking awesome.
He said Dimebag was an original, and only an original deserves an original. And I would have to be willing to bet that guitar is right up there with his, like, Frankenstein guitar. It'd be right up there with Stevie Ray Vaughan's number one Jimi Hendrix guitar.
Kurt Cobain's guitar, John Lennon's guitar.
Yeah, exactly. You can't put a price on it, what it's worth, because it's worth whatever somebody's going to pay for it. And if you put it in an auction, it's just going to go millions of dollars.
Yeah.
And he's just like, no, put it with him.
That's pretty awesome.
That's about as much as I could do without talking about the parties all the time, but I figured we'd do that at the end. Like, all the parties they would do. Dimebag loved fireworks so much.
Yes, he did.
Just in his house all the time. There's a whole video of him with one of his buddies brings his Ford F-150 or whatever it is out there, and he's just doing fucking donuts in the Circle parking lot until he blows a tire, and they're like, fuck it, let's go again. Jump in it. And they wanted to go until the tire completely flew off of it. And then they didn't stop then either. It's like all the landscaping's all fucked up. It's like they're throwing rocks and dirt everywhere, and they're all laughing about it. It's, whoa, yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Watch it go. Band members. Yeah, watch it go. Band members are passed out. He'll come in there and just freaking take a bottle of rock and throw it on the ground.
And just like light him and like throw him underneath his, like between his legs and shit and jump up. Yeah.
Oh fuck! Watch it go. Light them up.
Get your if you ever want to hear some, like, if you ever want to like research anything that's fucking hilarious, just type in crazy Pantera stories. Google that shit, and there's gonna be 50, 100, God knows how many. But God, those guys knew how to do it right.
Party, yeah, they did it upright up until Phil got into the heroin, because they was doing it right at the beginning. It was just like weed and beer and hard liquor, which is, you know, fine if that's what you want to do. I'd stay away from hard shit if I was you.
Grind it down.
But that's I don't know, a lot of those videos, dude, it's just, and he would do all these clinics and stuff. He would go into these places and play guitar for people, show them how it's done, and then he'd be like, you want to get up here and play, you want to play this? Of course, everybody's intimidated as fuck. So I ain't in front of you. Fucking talk about it. Get out of here. No. I don't even want to touch that thing. So I might break something. And then I learned, you know, the dime squeals and stuff. There's a little thing on YouTube where he shows you how he'd flick it and then fucking pinch harmonic it off.
Yeah, there's an interview about that. I think he's like in the back. It's at a show. And
yeah.
He at one point just like goes like, hey, shut up over there. I'm giving an interview. But he's talking about that little flick. Like, that's my signature thing. That's
his thing. That was his thing. Flick it and then bounce off. You'd flick it, bring it down, and then hit that pinch and you get that huge squeal out of it. And then he named his bathroom Slatanic, because Kerry King came over there to record something for him. And they was like, oh, man, do it in the bathroom. So he just recorded something for an album in the bathroom. There's another story about him recording something for Anthrax, where Scott Ian's is like, dude, we want you to record this part, because, we'll play it live. It won't be exactly like that, but on the album, we want it to sound, you know, perfect. We want it to sound exactly like this. And Scott was like, we'd have paid him whatever he wanted. And he goes, yeah, I'll do it. And it's like, what do you want? He's like, I'll just buy me a big screen TV. I mean, he didn't want any money. He had money.
He's probably like, well, I just threw something through my big screen TV, so just buy me a new one.
He probably put a hammer through the fucking thing anyway.
Cowboys lost again.
Got pissed, breaks the neighbor's car for parking it next to his house too long. That one episode. Yeah.
And I think I watched a video, like a tour of his house, and he actually had a guitar and a little amp in the bathroom so he could play while I was taking his shit.
He said that's where he wrote most of his good stuff. In the Slatanic bathroom. The Slatanic bathroom. Yeah, he said he had a little practice amp. I don't remember if it was a Randall or what it was, because he went from Randall to crank and then back to Randall. But he done the same thing with his guitars, because he went from Dean to Washburn, back to Dean.
Yeah.
And then all these guys switch guitars so much that it's fucking nuts. I don't know if you just make more money if you switch back and forth, but that also doesn't make sense, because like James Hetfield's been playing ESPs for how many years? But Kirk Hammett does too, but he's also got signature Gibsons. I don't fucking know.
Show me the money, Matt. Show me the money.
That's what it's all about. I don't buy any of them, man. If I did, I'd probably buy that Lars Fredriksson freaking LTD, because I've watched so many videos. He's got an ESP, and I'm assuming they probably give him one because it's his fucking signature. And I watch all these videos. He's up on stage playing that LTD version. Because he's like, no, I want to play the one that the kids can just go out and pull it off the rack and buy it and play. Which is one of the reasons why he's like one of my guitar heroes that I base my playing around, him and Doyle. Well, you couldn't tell by my playing, but yeah, that's exactly
what. Wait a minute. What?
Not a lot of technique here, buddy. It's just kind of get after it. A lot of palm muting.
Just keep hitting it until it pukes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
As one does. So yeah, like I said, this was one of the. Like I said, I wasn't going to say that guy's name more than once. Old cut knuckle. I want to do Stevie Ray Vaughan sometime, but that will be way easier to do because I can do that episode, and that was just like a mistake in a helicopter.
Yep.
Not a piece of shit. That was out of his fucking mind. That
spoiler alert.
Security didn't. Oh, if you don't know. Okay.
Yeah.
Stevie, how do you like your coffee? A little cocaine. At one point in time.
He sobered up.
At the end he did. He even got his brother to sober up, his older brother to sober up.
Yep.
But yeah, I could have done two episodes if we just wanted to talk about him partying, but then that's all it would have been, was just talk about, oh, they're drinking, throwing beers here, and Lindy starts choking it back. She's already upset that I even mentioned the word. So,
yeah.
Stopped myself from throwing up a few times here.
Stand down?
If you want to see the shenanigans, you need to go on YouTube and just type in Pantera home videos. I think they've released at least three of them.
No, there's three videos from hell. I've got all three, and I thought about giving those away, but I don't know if you can get it anymore.
You can't. No. The only place I've looked for it, because I tried to replace my video on, because I had it on VHS.
And this is like the three pack, and it's not even Blu-ray. I bought this before, because this is all DVD. It was after I don't have a VCR anymore. I was like, I can't watch it. And I was like, shit, found it. All right, yeah.
Yeah.
I think it was like at a fucking Best Buy or some shit.
Yeah.
I'll get this at a Clutch CD.
You better. I'm so hang on that one.
Oh shit. Well, all right, so anything else? I made it through without crying. I was about ready to lose it at the beginning, so I had to cut that part short. And then doing this, like just getting into it, it was kind of like, take a break. And then I'm gonna pop in this video and watch it. Yeah. And so I'm watching all these dime videos and I'm just like, yeah. And then I get back into the story. Dime, I need some dime.
Well, guys, continue to like, rate, and review the podcast if you would, please.
See that review button? Light it up.
Light it up. Watch it go.
Fire it up. Get your
We have been toying with the idea of small subscription thing. So we're doing that now. We're going to throw in an extra episode we're going to say an extra episode every 2 weeks, and it's only going to be for people that subscribe. $1.99, you can do that through the link in the episode description. Starting now, and all the first year episodes are available to all the subscribers as well. Otherwise, you better just listen when they come out and subscribe to the podcast and just make sure it's there every Tuesday, just like we are. That's all I've got. Matt, good job this week.
Thank you. And if you've got something, a comment from the beginning of the episode, like I was mentioning those guitars, you're like, you should have named this guy. Send an email. Don't just sit and yell at your fucking radio or whatever. It ain't going to do any good.
Or send us a voicemail on Spotify. Or just, you know, if you have an episode suggestion, we've got a little link on Spotify. Just go to our Spotify page. And
right
just,
on the Spotify there. Page and say, I would have said this, man, instead of looking like a psychopath in your car to the people that are driving by. It's like, who's he yelling at? What is wrong with this guy? Or lady.
What's wrong?
Like, why didn't you say Lita Ford when you said Warlock? I was like, because I didn't fucking think about it at the time. It just now popped in my head.
Anything else? Anywhere?
Les Paul Jr., I would have said Joan Jett.
Yeah.
I didn't write Les Paul Jr. down. We could keep going. Probably. Let's do a whole episode on guitars.
Don't give away the bonus material.
I definitely get it. Okay. No, that's it for me. I don't know what my next episode's going to be, but it's not going to make me as sad as this one.
All right.
Even if it's, you know, Gacy.
Wait a minute. Wendy's not going to let you do Gacy.
I'm not taking that from Wendy. Are you out of your mind?
Not happening. Wendy, you got anything else to add? No, I'm just going to shake your head.
I can see it in her eyes as soon as I said it was ree, 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 ree. No, you don't. No, you don't.
I'd let you take Gacy.
Guys, that's it for this week. Until next week, I'm Zach.
Spar.
Wendy.
Watch it go.
Hello. Later.
Bye. It's evil. Don't touch it.
It's alive! I want you.
They're coming to get you.
By the power of Christ.
This is
me.
Hello, Mr. Fancy Pants.
What's my line, Zach? What's my line?